Thanks for coming. I think a lot of you are working hard out in the warm day, right? So hopefully you can relax a little bit and sit down. So today I'm talking about how exercise and the outdoors boost mood and brain power. And a lot of you, I know a lot of you are retired. I was thinking about this afternoon and I thought, well, for my students, they're pretty stressed, but I don't know for you guys, if you had to rate yourself on low, moderate, or high stress in your real life, okay, how many of you would say low? Oh, that's awesome. That never happens in my classes. I know. How many of you would say moderate? I'd probably be in there. And anyone high? Okay, definitely. So I polled my students, and if you look at them, and you know, average student age at my college is about 33, so a lot of them already have their lives going. So it's high stress or moderate stress. Only 3 out of the group had low stress, so you guys are definitely a different population than what they are. But if you think about things going on in our lives, we've got work, family issues, busy schedules, and so maybe not you guys necessarily, but your kids or the people around you have very high stress lives. So if you think about all of the things we have to think about today in our busy lives with technology and getting places and with the jobs that we have, it's almost unattainable sometimes with the amount of stress in our lives. So think about something really high stress that stresses you out, okay? Get that in your mind, that picture in your mind. Let me go to the next slide here. And then take a deep breath and look at this. Does that change your stress level at all to look at some nature? These are some pictures I've taken the last few days since being at Holden. And today we're going to talk a lot about how nature and being in the outdoors and exercise can help alleviate the everyday stresses that we have in our lives. Okay, so we're seeing an increase in depression. We're seeing an increase in mental illness, just stress in general. And we talked about on Tuesday was an increase in obesity as well. This is for the county that I live in, which is Cowlitz County. Very high as far as low health is concerned. Our obesity in Cowlitz County is 32%. Washington State is around 27%. And then just looking at the mental health too. So on average, people were saying they have about 4 days per month where they have poor mental health. And 12% of our county feels like they have frequent mental distress. So this is common across the country. It's not just in Cowlitz County. So for those of us thinking about if we have a higher calling out there, I don't know, but for me personally, I want to be able to live my life to my full potential and be ready for it, whatever that might be. So if we think about all of the aspects of wellness, it's not just spiritual or mental or emotional, but it's that physical aspect of wellness as well. And we want to be healthy in all those areas to be our best self. And they all interlock and they all connect in other ways. So if you're looking at this from a Christian perspective, you'd look at the idea that God wants good things for us. And a couple of these Bible verses here, he wants to heal us. He has plans for our welfare to give us a future with hope. So thinking about the depression, the mental illness, he doesn't want those things in our lives. Happiness. What makes you guys happy? We'll talk about this in a second. But this is just an interesting fun fact here, is that Yale had a class last year called Psychology and the Good Life, and a quarter of their student body signed up for this class. It was the most students ever to sign up for a class. 1,200 students enrolled in that. What do you think is going on with that? Are we not happy? Were they looking for something to make them happier in their lives? The 4 things that make people happy, and there's research on this, is 1, well-connected to our community and friendships. 2, survival needs are met. 3, minds are stimulated and engaged. And 4, is being outdoors in green and natural habitats. Things that when we are the least happy is at work, when we're sick, and when we're alone. Do you guys agree with these 2 lists for your own lives? Yeah? Okay. All right, so I asked my students when they are most happy, and number one was when they were with loved ones. Would you guys agree with that? Yeah. Second was when doing something they enjoy, so a hobby or something else. Third was when outside in nature, which I was surprised by that, but that's good. Next was exercising, and then the lowest one was when they were at work. So maybe they need to find a job that better fits or suits them, but and at school was kind of in the middle of when they're feeling happy. So, okay, are we spending time doing the things that make us happy is the question. Well, most of us, not the retired folks, right, but a lot of us spend 7 to 8 hours a day at work or school. As we saw in the last slide, that's not something that typically makes people happy. Our kids are spending 2 to 7 hours a day on screens. Is that something that makes people happy, to be on a screen? Not usually. Teens spend more time on screens than off. Isn't that scary? Piece of research there. Kids today spend half as much time outside as their parents did. And what are they doing inside? Screen time, right? Video games, or they're on tablets, yep. Our kids are actually becoming tech addicts. So you might see, like, parents with toddlers, mom or dad takes away the tablet, what do? They start screaming and crying. So we're actually becoming, we're getting our kids addicted to technology. So I asked my students how often they spend on screens per day. And you can see the average, and this was outside of the school day, so on average was 3 to 4 hours, but then you see it ranges from 1 to 6 hours. I had one student 7 to 8 hours on a screen. Luckily, we had a zero here, but nobody is not spending time on screens because we all need them for the things that we're doing in our lives. Makes Holden a little bit different, right, because we aren't spending time on screens. So is our digital connection disconnecting us? Most of us check our phones 1,500 times per week. Do you guys agree with that? The studies show this. That's 150 times per day. The average teen sends 3,000 texts each month. This one was interesting. They attribute this to screens, but nearsightedness has increased in East Asia by 90% just in the last 5 years or so. And they believe it's because of the screen time. And then just comparing it to this other research is 1 in 4 American women takes an antidepressant. 18% of Americans have some type of anxiety or depression, and that tends to be increasing currently. So depression rates in the U.S. have increased 33% between 2013 and 2016. 33%, that's pretty significant. Does that have to do with the digital connection? We also see the mental illness increasing. Okay, we talked about this on Tuesday for those of you that were here. The obesogenic society is a society where we allow obesity just with our lifestyle. And we talked about this last time. We're burning more calories or less calories than we used to. Most of us are sitting at desk jobs during the day. We're eating fast food, processed food, high sugar foods. We get places by car. We use our smartphones and video games. People are indoors and inactive 93% of the day. Is that making us sick? I talked a little bit on Tuesday about leading causes of death. This is just a chart to show you guys a comparison between 1900 and today. We were dying from infectious diseases way back then, but now heart disease and cancer are number 1 and 2. But also we have stroke, accidents, diabetes, Alzheimer's. But of these top ones here, 6 of them are attributed to lifestyle, so diet and exercise related. So are we meant to be inactive as humans? Is our body meant to sit around? No, we are not. So if we look at our ancestors, and we talked about this last time too, they walked or ran 12 to 18 miles per day, men and women, hunting and gathering. They burned 1,000 calories a day just in their physical activity. Today, we burn an average of 300. But not only were they moving, but they had to think and strategize while moving. So they're planning a hunt, or they're working together and collaborating. Whatever it might be, there was a mind-body connection. So they're thinking and moving at the same time. Did they have stress back then? Absolutely. So stress is not new. We have a lot of stress today, but our ancestors had a ton of stress too. If you had to think about what they had to go through, mortality rates were so much higher. Uncertainties just of food and shelter, things to worry about with their territory or shelter, fear of wild animals, fear of other groups of people. They didn't have cures to the sicknesses and diseases they had. And they didn't have the medications that we have today to handle these things. So they still had plenty of stress in their lives. So how did they deal with the stress? It's a big question here. Well, they lived outside, so that's key to the answer. Humans have spent 99.9% of our existence in the outdoors. So if you think about the rhythms of being outside, just of the sunrise to the sunset, and thinking about the temperature changes from night to day, also throughout the seasons. Nowadays, we love to be in that comfortable 72 degrees no matter where we are, if we're indoors, if we're in our car. Their bodies responded to that daylight, whereas we turn lights on, we leave them on late into the night when we stay awake. So the rhythms of our ancestors were very different than what we have today. Okay. I would like you to picture your favorite place outside. It can be somewhere near Holden, but it can be anywhere. It should be a place where there are no people and no technology. And I want you to think of your five senses in that place. What are some things that you smell? What do you see? What colors do you see? Do you smell flowers? Do you smell water? What do you hear? Is it water, wind, birds? What can you touch? And is there anything you can taste? Okay, so let's go back to the first one. What did you guys smell out in nature? Anybody? Pine needles, okay.
Freshness.
Ocean. The ocean, yeah. Good. What about, what did you see?
Snow.
Anyone else?
A lake.
Clouds. Okay.
Mountains.
Plants. Trees. What did you hear? Silence. Okay, that can be peaceful. Birds. Okay.
Water.
Marmots, cool. The wind. And what did you touch? Dirt. Anyone taste anything? Berries or?
Coconut,
nice, okay. No? Okay, we're gonna come back to this. But when we're in nature, all five of our senses can be fully engaged. Okay, so how can nature affect us? That's our picture from our boat ride. When we are in nature, we have higher alpha waves in your brain. Alpha waves are associated with relaxation. When we are thinking and we can't have alpha waves at the same time. It's kind of like a relaxing state. So this is one of the key studies that I looked at, is they exposed three groups of people to the same stressful event. So for all of them, they know they were stressed because heart rates, sweating, blood pressure, all of that increased. So they were all stressed. So in one group, they had them after this go out into nature for a walk. One group, they had them look at pictures of nature. And the third group had them do nothing. So guess what happened? Those who went out into nature fully recovered from the stress within 5 minutes, those that went on the walk. The ones that watched the video partially recovered but not fully, and this was an hour later. And the ones who did nothing never recovered much at all. And this is an hour later. So it's kind of interesting. So it's showing us that our stress response, we can return back to a normal state just by getting outside in nature that can decrease our stress levels. So another study they did, they took Japanese businessmen and had them go on a hike every morning for 3 days. Okay. And their killer T cells increased by 40% just after 3 days of hiking. And this boost lasted for 7 days, for a whole week. So those of you who've been hiking this week, you can think about that when you go home. You've probably boosted some amazing things in your body. Getting in the dirt. How many of you like to garden? I know some of you have been working on that this week. Just exposing yourself to soil bacteria can increase your serotonin, which is that happy hormone, and less anxiety. So keep doing that. How many of you like the smell of evergreen trees? I know I do. Just smelling them can increase anti-cancer proteins and your blood pressure drops. And this BDNF, which actually is like Miracle-Gro for your brain development, is boosted just by smelling evergreen trees. So getting yourself outside near them. Okay. So your brain has three systems. The executive network is the intellectual network, the task-focused network. We have a spatial network, which orients us, and we have a default network, which is the creative, daydreaming-type network. So the interesting thing is executive and default cannot run at the same time. I know most of us, especially for me with 4 kids and a full-time job, I am almost always in this executive network throughout the day. Is it healthy for us to stay there all day long? No, that's not good for our brains. So when we go out in nature, this default network becomes much stronger. And it becomes, and it takes over. So most of us are in executive, but when we're out in nature, we are starting to use the default. When that happens, the executive network actually gets a chance to rest, which is what it needs. So going out in nature can help with that. Also, the default network engages positive thoughts. You're less likely to think about negative things when you're out in nature. And I know many people that claim to have some great idea or solve life's problems when they go outdoors, right? Okay, I think I mentioned that already. Okay, so we mentioned your brain rests in nature. How many of you like to hike? Most of you. How many of you have been on a hike in the last week? Most of you. Okay. So hopefully you can relate to this. When you were on your hike, did you feel sort of alert and aware, focused yet calm? Kind of have this focus, you're doing something, but you have this calm physical state. That's how most of us feel when we are out on a hike. It's this calm, alert zone. We're not distracted. We're not typically thinking about these minor distractions in our life, but we can let our brain relax. Also, we're moving at a human speed when we're walking, hiking, even jogging. But real life, when we're driving in a car, when we're watching TV, playing video games, your brain can't keep up with the speed of that. Our brain is meant to function at this human speed. So walking, hiking can be really great for the brain's functioning. Okay, there's also something called a soft fascination, which is when we watch something that's really beautiful, a sunset, waterfall, the snow falling, rainbow, things like that. So we've all seen things like that, I'm sure. Okay, let's talk about daylight. So we've all heard of seasonal affective disorder. I know I'm from the Pacific Northwest, so that's an issue, and I think at Holden especially, right, because daylight's not much around in the wintertime.
We have more light here than when I lived
in Seattle.
Do you?
Okay.
Much less.
That's good.
I mean, it's right. Not direct sun, but there's more light.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so light hitting the eye is actually one of the most important things to wake the brain up for the day. It stimulates cortisol in the morning. If you look at the natural rhythm of what we should be, this black line is cortisol, and it should spike first thing in the morning, and then during the day it drops off while we're sleeping and then spikes just before we get up. This other line here is melatonin, which is the hormone that helps us sleep, which obviously is going to be low during the day, and you want it to start rising up before you go to bed at night, stays high during the night, and then drops down in the morning. So things to help us keep this natural function is have your window shades open in your bedroom so you get that natural light coming in. Get outside first thing in the morning, the first 20 to 30 minutes of the day. Turning on lights doesn't quite do the same thing for our brain. So outdoor light is actually 10 times brighter even if the day is overcast. So it's good to get outside. Daily outdoor exercise can help with this as well. Sunlight actually helps your body release dopamine, which is another feel-good hormone. So getting out in the sun can feel really good. Of course, you get the vitamin D as well. Mm-hmm. So our problem is we're looking at screens a lot at night, right? When we look at blue lights, our cortisol remains high in the evening when it's supposed to drop down. So working late, drinking coffee, eating, those can all increase the cortisol in the evening as well. But any of that blue light increases cortisol. So if you look at a computer or a phone or a tablet in the evening hours, that will keep your body awake. It takes hours for cortisol to leave the bloodstream. So you actually want to get off your device a few hours before you go to bed. So I asked my students if they're on devices before bed. And almost all of them are on their phones within 2 hours of bedtime and or watching movies and TV and or eating. So all of those things will not help them to fall asleep right away.
Do they blame it on you and your homework?
Of course. They're studying. They're up late studying. Yeah. Yes.
Are TVs considered blue light as well?
I believe so.
Yeah.
There's a way you can actually change some settings, I know, on your phone so that it's more of a red light than a blue light. I'm not sure how to do that, but yeah, to make it, yeah, better for your brain. Okay, we're going to switch gears and talk about physical activity in the brain, and then we'll tie everything together. So there are so many studies out there that show exercise helps the brain. I think most of us already know that. If we look at school-age children especially, when they exercise, they perform better academically, they have a better mood, better behavior in class. I was impressed when I heard that the school here at Holden does their recess the first half hour before they even come to school. That's awesome. That way they're getting that exercise in before they have to come sit down. If you look at this picture, I know it's hard to see, but these are two students, and it's the brain activity during a quiz. And one of them, the one on the right, took a walk before taking the quiz, and the other one did not. So you can see how much more is engaged in the brain just from being active before sitting down to take the quiz. There are studies that show students who have PE right before math, their test scores are much higher than students who are sitting in other classes right before math, the same exact, you know, group of students. There are just so many studies out there showing that. But what do our schools continue to do? Is, right, cut PE, take away recess, and increase seat time.
Growing up in the 50s and 60s in California, we were required to have an hour a day of PE from kindergarten.
That's awesome.
Grade 12, but yeah. That went away when the testing came in later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, and that's how it should be, but yeah. Okay, so exercise actually helps new brain cells to grow. The best way to help your brain is through aerobic-type exercise, which is getting the heart rate up. We talked about BDNF, but that's also increased during exercise. You get more blood flow, like we see in that picture there. People who exercise actually have larger brains.
How about, yeah. So, I mean, you're promoting being outside, but how yeah. about you exercise in a gym?
That's better than not exercising. It's great. Yeah. And some people prefer that, and that's fine if that's what you prefer. Yeah, you want to do it. It's like this, I don't think it's actually a hormone, but it's something, a chemical, that helps your brain to grow. Yeah. Okay, so exercise impact on stress and anxiety. So if we have stress and anxiety that causes the feeling of fear, we go into that fight or flight or freeze mode, that stress hormone, cortisol, shoots up and increases, right? So my kids and I just did the second level loop just before me teaching this session, and we saw the mama bear and her cub. And I'll tell you, my heart rate went up a little bit when I saw him, and I was like, oh, she's just doing her thing. We're good. We just kind of decided to go the other way. But I slightly went into this, definitely. So that cortisol is released. And back in the day, for your ancestors, this was a good thing, right? You had adrenaline, extra sugars are released from your liver to help you move fast to flee and get away. But what are the types of stress that we have today? Typically, it's not seeing a bear. Typically, it's going to be, you know, school stress or work stress or technology stress, or we lost our keys or we lost our phone. And are those things where we have to go out and move? Not usually. They're just kind of internal stressors. And so what does our body do? It stores up all this cortisol, and we have all this extra sugar released, and we just sit there. So is that good for us? No, the thing your body wants to do is to move in that case. And so this is not helping our stress response. Can exercise help depression? Absolutely. So exercise can help you make those connections in your brain that aren't there. It also releases those happy hormones in your body. There are many, many studies showing how exercise can help depression even better than medications in some cases. And then you don't have the side effects of that. I think the tough thing is getting the motivation to get out there and exercise when you're depressed, right? Yeah. Okay. So PTSD. Does anyone know, have a friend or know someone with PTSD? Okay. So for these people, cortisol is continuously high in their brain. So they are in a constant state of stress. The therapy for that is not doing that well for these people, but what is working is outdoor programs, getting them outside. One of the studies I was looking at was really interesting, is they took a group of people with PTSD and they put them on a whitewater kayaking trip. And my first thought was, this is not a good idea. Like, they're already stressed out and you're going to put them in a stressful situation. This could not be good. But at the end of the weekend, so they do this weekend trip, their stress rates were actually decreased. So when they faced that stress, they went into a stressful environment, being high stress already, helped them to release that stress. So they see improvements in mental health from the outdoor programs. And even a month after these little weekend trips that they're doing, there is a boost in the mood and mental well-being of people with PTSD. What's unique and what's interesting is they combine not just the physical activity, but also the outdoors, but also collaboration. So those three components together. Okay, do you guys like to go for walks? Yeah? So going on a walk outside can decrease your cortisol levels, decrease sympathetic nerve activity, decrease blood pressure. And I thought this was interesting, decrease in heart rate. I thought, well, you're working when you're on a walk, but maybe we're so stressed when we're before we go on a walk that it actually decreases our heart rate to go out on a walk. What do you guys do when you're stressed? Anybody? Do you have a way of coping? Eat? Okay, music is a really good one. There's definitely healthier and unhealthier ways to deal with it, right? Yeah. So I asked my students, and number one was music. Isn't that interesting? I thought that was great. Number two was time with family and friends, exercise. So the top three are pretty healthy. And then we see, of course, mindless screen time, coffee. These are probably not the best ideas. And then we have getting outside, chores, emotional eating, prayer and meditation, art, all of these things down here. But we all have ways we try and cope with stress, and of course we want to try and find the healthier ways to do that. I know for me, when I'm really stressed, I crave either going to the beach or the mountains. Does anyone relate to that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting, in that one of the books I was looking at is we tend to seek places that give us what we need. So even coming up to Holden here, is that giving you some restorative things that we might need? Another fun fact is Hawaii tends to be ranked the happiest state in the U.S. many times. Is it the outdoor time that people spend, or maybe they're on vacation, so less stress? But there's a lot of green spaces, blue spaces, you're near the water, and it's a beautiful outdoor setting, which could be part of it. I would assume that would be the people that live there. Yeah. Yeah, so.
They're very family oriented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They're not paid very well.
No, they're not. Yes, it is. Yeah. But they're still happy.
Yeah,
so that tells you that's not important, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so let's look at the beach. Can it actually affect your brain in a positive way? Yes, it can. So if you look at the stock photo is maybe what some of you picture when you picture the beach. And then here's an actual picture of my kids at the beach where it's foggy and a little bit cold. That's in Oregon. But when we're at the beach, we fully engage all of our senses. If you think about it, you hear the ocean. The rhythmic sound of the ocean is actually one of the most calming sounds for the human brain. So you hear the ocean. You get that, the blue of the ocean and the blue of the sky if it's nice out. actually, the smell of the salt water is very calming. It has negative ions in it, which is good for us. And then if you take your shoes off, you actually get the sensation, of course, of walking on the sand. So you're engaging all your senses when you go to the beach. So we tend to be less stressed, more relaxed, more engaged when we go there, which is why many of us seek that out when we are high stress. They were a little crazy. It's not that warm there. But they were having fun. So, all right. So if we're moving at the beach, that can be even better. So going for a walk or even just getting your feet wet in the ocean, playing in the waves. But studies show that any water can be restorative to us. So the sound of water, like I said, is one of the best things for the human brain. Next in line for calming us is, I believe, the sound of wind, and then it's sound of birds, so in that order. But water is number one. Green spaces are spaces where we see a lot of trees and grass and green things growing. That's really restorative to our brain, but blue spaces are even better for the brain. So if you can find places with water, this was just from this week over at 10 Mile Falls. But if you can get near water, listen to water, or even get out on the water, swimming, paddleboarding, whatever that might be, that can be restorative for us. What about the snow? Some of you mentioned that when you pictured something, right? I love the snow. Something about the snow also affects our brain. A lot of it's linked to childhood memories. How many of you have good memories playing in the snow as a child? Okay. I know some people get stressed out with, like, driving in it, right? But tends to bring people together. Everything looks different when you look out the window. I know those of you that live at Holden, it probably looked the same for a long time with lots of snow, but let's see. Going to the mountains, just looking at the mountains can be restorative. They're awe-inspiring. The cold air is good for your brain, actually helps your brain to function better in the cold air. You can do all sorts of things out in the snow for fun. When I brought my kids here this time, we usually come in the winter. They said, what are we going to do? We can't sled or ski. Because it's fun to get out in the snow. A lot of people think that being in the cold will make you catch a cold, but actually it boosts your immune system to be out in the cold. And we have healthy brown fat on our bodies that a lot of people don't know about. And this actually helps you to burn white fat. So if you spend time in the cold, your brown fat is activated and helps burn your white fat. People tend to have a sense of happiness and overall well-being after being out in the snow. Okay, so the idea of awe is actually considered an emotion, a power emotion. It's linked to a sense of mystery where it's something you don't fully and completely comprehend or understand. It's something that actually blows your mind. So it changes you when you have an awe-inspiring moment. And some examples of this might be you see the Northern Lights, you swim with dolphins, you saw the eclipse we had not that long ago. Does anyone say they've had an awe experience? Okay, a few of you. But this can be, it's usually out in the outdoors, and it's just something that absolutely blows your mind. And it can change who you are. We also have negative awe experiences, and these would be things like hurricanes, earthquakes, fires. And they tend to be a negative thing, but people tend to reach out and connect after those events, which can be a healthy thing to do. Okay, Finland actually is pretty amazing as far as their physical activity and getting out in nature. They tend to get out in nature 2 or 3 times per week. 70% of them hike on a regular basis, which we definitely can't say. For US, I believe, is about 30% or less for that. They do things like biking, jogging, long-distance ice skating. Doesn't that sound fun? but 95% of the people there spend time outdoors on a regular basis, which is more than we can say for here. Their happiness score is one of the highest in the world. And they actually have a quota on their public health to encourage people to go outdoors and walk often together, which is pretty amazing. I wish we had something like that as well. Okay, so green exercise is being physically active while in nature. This university started a program of green exercise to help people with problems with mental health. And they also connect it with the social experience as well. And they've already helped 12,000 people with mental health issues just by being outdoors and being active and combining that collaboration piece, those three things together that we've been talking about. Okay, so indoor versus outdoor exercise. One of you was asking about that. The studies are pretty interesting. They had a group of people go on a mountain, like a hike through the mountains, and they had them do the same workout on a treadmill, so the exact same ups and downs. Who do you think was happier? The people that went actually into the mountains and hiked. Their heart rates were higher, so that shows us that they actually were working harder than the people on the treadmill, but their mood was better, they were happier, and their overall enjoyment was higher. Same thing with doing the same workout type class, indoor versus outdoor. Adherence is better if it's outdoor. Positive mood is better if it's outdoor. That doesn't mean don't exercise if you want to exercise indoors. Go for it. If you don't like the rain or you don't like whatever, then yeah, definitely do indoor. But that's what the studies show. What about our kids? Should they be outdoors more often? The best, single best thing for kids' brains, this is boys and girls, for development, for behavior, for mood, for social, everything, would be unstructured outdoor playtime. So throw them outside, basically. Don't tell them what to do. Just give them a free space where they can go and play. Are we doing enough of that today? We are not. They have to use all of their senses when they're outside. They have to learn to collaborate and work with each other. They're learning spatial awareness. They're learning about their body. They're being creative with their brains. Their brains just develop so much better when they have this unstructured outdoor playtime. So I don't know, you can't see this picture very well, but this is a couple summers ago when we were camping at Lake Wenatchee. And I have 4 boys, and you can kind of see them. But down by the lake, there was this down log, and they just were all playing at the log. I didn't have to give them a tablet or anything to do, and they were collaborating and working together. And my husband and I were like, wow, like, we just need a log to keep our kids happy. So we actually had to pull them away from the log to get them to come eat, and then they wanted to go back down by the lake again after dinner and play at the log. So just example of that's what they need. But in today's society, what are our kids doing? We're so busy, and babies are always, you know, we have them strapped into things. Car seats, high chairs, strollers are always strapped in. We're seeing an increase in ADHD, obesity. We're seeing more allergies and asthma, vitamin D deficiencies. I know, like, the kids, my kids' age, they go straight from school to whatever, you know, practices they might need to go to, straight home. They have to do their homework, and they go to bed. Everything is structured. So when are they getting this unstructured outdoor playtime? Even if our kids are doing sports, they're outside, but the coach is telling them what to do. It's not unstructured. So we need to rethink this. What about our kids at school? We were talking about how they sit too much. The kids in Finland are outside 15 minutes out of every hour. Can you imagine? Throwing them outside for recess every single hour. And they are still one of the top nations for academics, even with all that time not in seats. I know that my kids' school, they just added 10 more minutes to the day, right, of seat time, and they took away 10 minutes of recess. Yeah, so they added 20 minutes of seat time to the day for academic reasons. So we're also less PE, less recess time. Are we actually helping our kids with that?
Can you go to the school board with all this information and just say?
My husband teaches there. I would love to, but yeah, they're pretty strong about the whole academic thing. It's hard to fight. So, yeah. Okay, so what are the recommendations, the takeaway from this? Get outside and get moving. The first 20 to 30 minutes a day will help with that natural daylight. If you are indoors, try and find a place near a window to work. That can really help. And they've done studies on people who are hospitalized. If their bed is next to a window, they recover faster than if they're not. So just even being closer to the outdoors that way can help. We should move every hour. Sitting is the new smoking. Have you guys heard that? No? It's not just, you know, work out for an hour a day. It's get up every hour and move around. Get outdoors as much as you can and find places closer to nature. So if you work in a building, try and get out away from traffic when you're outside, like actually closer to trees in a park or something like that. Minimize that screen time. That's a hard one. There's a Bible verse on, you know, working too hard. We want to get our rest, too. We want our brains to rest, too. Moving twice a day at least, even if it's just 10 minutes. So even if you just have a quick 10-minute break at school or at work, get up, walk around. I know in the building I'm in, I'll get up and use a restroom in a different building just to get myself up and moving more. Get outside when possible, even if the weather's bad. I know where I live is just lots of rain. So I have, you know, waterproof pants, waterproof shoes, and I have a good friend that she'll send me a text, hey, can you get out for your lunch break, and we'll go for a walk in the rain. But just getting outside whenever we can. Don't use your screens 2 hours before bed. Watch that caffeine, especially later in the day. It stays in your system for 8 hours. So this is what one of the studies recommends, is a minimum of 5 hours a month being outside. This would be a few times a week for 30 minutes. This will help elevate your mood and sustain that in your life. But the more, the better. So you can't go wrong. You can't get too much outdoor time. So the more outdoor time you get, the better it's going to be for your mental health and your well-being. So 10 hours per month would be about 30 minutes, 5 days per week. Or if you can, just get out of town for a weekend, 2 to 3 days. Like, you guys are coming out here for the week or however long. But going camping or something like that will get you out of the urban setting and help your brain. So the more wild the setting, the stronger the effect on your mental health. Almost done. Okay. So having that sense of support is key, like we talked about in those studies with PTSD and the green exercise and mental health. Having that social connection as part of it can be beneficial as well. So if you can include that, then invite others to join you, whether it's for a walk or a bike ride or whatever it might be. But sometimes it's nice to get out by yourself too, right? We all need some alone time, so that's perfectly great too. But if you can find friends, I have a good friend that will go, you know, kayaking or paddleboarding together. But when I go running, I like to do that by myself. So just thinking about those things. And if you don't have a human buddy, you can bring your furry buddy. That's our dog, Rudy. So my students feel the least stressed when with loved ones, when in nature, and when engaged in a hobby. So just combining those three things together can really help our mental health and our stress levels. We can create for ourselves an active environment. A lot of us have our houses set up not to be active in our yards, right? We get home and there's a couch, so we want to sit, and there's a TV. But just having things set up differently can help. So outside, do you have a garden or a yard that you can work in and get outside? And if you live in a small space, is there a park nearby that you can get to? Like at our house, we like to have a badminton net up all summer long to encourage our kids to get outside. Other things you can do is take a class. There tends to be trails in every city that you can just go try out to walk, jog, bike, or whatever it might be. And then just investing in, these are all sorts of different things, whatever it is that you might enjoy might be worth investing in so you can get out, just to get you outside and active more often. Okay. So we're always going to have stress in our lives, even those of you that had super low stress. So I would encourage all of us to seek more outdoor activities and more physical exercise experiences, because they will restore us, renew us, and reset us, and help alleviate that stress in our lives. So getting outside as close to nature as much as we can, look for those awe experiences, and then share those experiences with others. Any questions or comments? Okay, thank you.